podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, October 19th, 2019. This is episode 1636. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/techguy. Oh, hi. Hi. Hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. I didn't do my red leather, yellow leather warm-ups. Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. There we go. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about smart watches. All that jazz at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still reach me. You just have to use Skype out or something like that, you know. 8888-ASK-LEO. Should be a toll-free call from everywhere in the world. This week is a week that will live in infamy. This week, Google had its product announcement made by Google 2019, and it was an odd one. It was an odd one because, Google was in a little bit of a pickle because they had really everything had leaked out. There wasn't anything we didn't know. So there wasn't a whole lot. There wasn't a whole lot to talk about. So what they decided to do is instead kind of, I don't know. Some people said it was boring. They did kind of a low energy. Well, here's what we're talking about. So I'll tell you what they announced in case you're interested. They did announce the new Pixel 4 phone. And of course, everybody, I think, has been waiting for that. An iPhone came out last month. And the battleground is really pretty much around the camera. Although voice assistance, that's pretty important too. Then there's minor things. Screen, does it have a notch? You know, things like that. But mostly people are looking at the camera. And the question was, now that the iPhone came out with three lenses on the back of its iPhone 11 and Pro, and really nice, by the way, really superb camera. Plus, don't forget, maybe you didn't know, so I'll tell you now, Apple is going to do a software update to this new iPhone 11. I think it might even apply to earlier iPhones, but definitely the iPhone 11 that is going to somewhat significantly improve the image quality, which is, you know, you might ask, well, why wasn't it ready? No, I guess it wasn't. It's in iOS 13.2, so that could happen any day now. In fact, it was my theory that Apple was just waiting to see what Google announced, then so they can quickly throw whatever was missing into their update. So Apple's phone will get better. It's already very good. The question is the Pixel 4 a worthy challenger? And I think the consensus is it depends. Depends what you're taking a picture of. In some cases, Google does better. In some cases, Apple does better. Both of them are so good that you're not going to want even a single point-and-shoot camera. You're not going to need a separate standalone camera. Your camera phone, if you have one of these two new phones, is there. It's in it. It's all built in. And it's all because of something called computational photography. That was one thing at the Google event I thought they did quite well. The father of computational photography, his name is Mark Lavoie, spent some time really geeking out. And I don't know if you saw the event or not. Most people didn't. Google streamed it, but most people I know, ain't nobody got time for that. So that's why you listen to me. I'll tell you. Mark Lavoie talked about how on any of these modern smartphones, the lenses, the sensors are tiny. They're small. They have to fit into a little device. And generally with sensors, small means lower quality. You just can't gather enough light. The pixels are smaller. But what's amazing is what they can do with software after the image is snapped. And so one thing Apple did in this iteration is they put three lenses on their Pro version. There's a kind of zoomed in one. They call it the telephoto. There's a kind of medium one, the normal lens. And then there's a wide, it's ultra wide angle lens that gets everything you can see pretty much into the picture. And having those three is nice because you can, without moving, without walking, call it sneaker zoom, you can zoom in or zoom out on a subject. You just stand there and you can get different three different ways of looking at it. That's nice. I love that. Samsung did it earlier this year with their S10. Actually, maybe they even did it earlier than that. I know Huawei and some other companies have had three lenses for a while. But they don't have the software that Apple does. And that's the other thing that happens. It's not just that there are three new camera, you know, aspect ratios or what do you call it, zoom levels. It's also that when you take one shot, Apple can collect information from all three lenses and different kinds of information all at the same time, then use the software to merge it together to make an incredibly beautiful picture. That's computational photography. And now that you carry a supercomputer in your pocket, it really is doable. We don't have to spend a lot of money on fancy lenses in the camera. We can put all our energies into making a really nice bit of software that takes whatever it gets from the camera and makes it look better. And they're doing that. And Google's the king of that. Mark Lavoie, who invented it at Stanford University, then retired from Stanford. He's a professor emeritus there, went to work for Google. His team is the one that's doing all these amazing things. Things like the night sight on the Pixel 3, last year's Pixel, which returns in Pixel 4, which takes multiple images, up to nine images at the same time, some brighter, some darker, then merges them together instantaneously to produce a picture in pitch black that looks like the sun is out. It's amazing. It's really an amazing effect. Apple can do that now. They call it night shot or something. I mean, you know, it's the same idea. The Pixel 4 will do some really interesting things. And this is what Apple's doing, too, interestingly. The Apple software that I mentioned that's coming out later with 13.2 is called Deep Fusion. And one of the things Apple says is with Deep Fusion, we use artificial intelligence and machine learning. That's the buzzword of this decade, isn't it? Machine learning to teach the camera what a sky looks like, what sweaters look like, what water looks like, what human skin looks like. And different parts of the picture will be optimized depending on what's in the picture. Google said, we can do that. We can do that. And by the way, Google, Mark Lavoie talking about the Google cameras said, in fact, he showed a shot. This is a shot that's historically hard to get where it's a shot of the night sky. The moon is super, super bright, which means that in order to get the image, the camera has to darken down so that the shoreline, the trees, they're pitch black. It's just a silhouette. And Mark Lavoie said a funny thing. He said, well, you know, with software, you could maybe fix that. Stay tuned, he said. Stay tuned. Implying that like Apple, with its Deep Fusion, Google was going to release an update to the camera in a month. It's a seesaw battle back and forth. But you know who wins? You know why this is great. We win. That's why it's great. Because these two companies are fighting tooth and nail. And that means it gets better for both of us. That's what you want. For all of us, for them, for us, for you, for me, for all the nice people. So all the nice people. So if you want to take a look, I think there are a number of reviews online. I have the Apple. I'll be getting the Pixel 4. Well, I'm going on vacation, so I think I'll be gone by the time it comes out, which is a bummer because I really wanted to take it with me. But you can go online. The Verge and others have side-by-side comparisons. And what you'll see, I think what you'll see is what everybody pretty much agrees, which is, well, it depends. Partly on what you're taking pictures of, partly on what your personal taste is. Because this is the truth of it. No camera produces an image that looks exactly like what you see in your head. Because guess what? Your eyes are also doing computational photography, except instead of a microprocessor, it's your brain, which is taking an image that's upside down and weird, fixing it, adding psychological hints like romantic sunset. Ooh, isn't that pretty? And it gives that picture a quality that no camera can reproduce. So nobody's trying to exactly duplicate what you see with your eyes. That's impossible. Your brain is a very different processor. And they can't even tell what your brain's going to do compared with the other person's brain. So they're not going to know. And that's why when you take a picture of a sunset, you ever have this experience, you're standing and you're watching this gorgeous sunset and you say, oh, I got to save this forever. You take a picture, you get it home and it's like, huh. Well, it's not how I remembered it. And you could, you know, you could play with software, fiddle with all the sliders and in your photo editing program and try to get it close. Maybe you can, but it's never going to be like it was when you were there. So it's normal. It's acceptable that these cameras aren't going to reproduce exactly your experience. What you want is an image coming out of the camera that makes you feel the same or makes you feel a certain way, makes you feel good about it. And honestly, that's very subjective. Some people will like how the iPhone looks. Some people will like how the Pixel 4 looks. Some people will like how the Samsung looks. They all do different things. They're all arguably doing a great job. So I think the only way to decide really is to look at the images, go to review sites like The Verge and DP Review and see what they put up there and say, I like that. And also, honestly, no one phone does the best job in every situation. Some are better at dark. Some are better at bright. So it's hard to choose. I have to say this, and I've said it every time, and now I'll say it again now that we've seen the Pixel 4. If you buy any modern smartphone, and if you're willing to spend, you know, between $800 and $1,000 for, you know, kind of the top-of-the-line modern smartphone, you're going to get a great camera and all the other stuff, a very fast computer, etc. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, coming up. Kim Schaffer's here. She's answering the phones. Your call next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tried, many have tried, all have failed to break the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Kimmy, don't take no what? Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Welcome. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You're prepared, you know. This is the weekend where we're going to just go crazy and take a lot of calls, right?
Okay, I'll believe it when I see
it. Yeah, I know. I like to talk. I know. Who should I start with?
How about Robbie in Nashville, Tennessee?
Robbie in Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I was wanting to know if you was aware of something.
Okay, I think I am aware of something. Oh, no, you probably have something in specific you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
It has to do with wireless unlimited data plans.
Oh.
Now, I don't know. I thought it was the area I was in, but come to find out that, and this happened for up to a whole year where I was throttled down to unusable speed. I could not use my phone to bring out the Wyze cam to take, I take care of somebody at the house. I couldn't bring a video up to look after her or do anything with it until I was back on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And I was about to switch carriers.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was just my location.
You thought the word unlimited meant unlimited.
Well, no, I'm not talking about when you go over your data plan.
Oh.
No. I'm talking about you're throttled just for being on the plan. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh,
you're saying
yeah.
You can't go any... who's your carrier?
It's Verizon. I was not able to load web pages.
Well, that's terrible.
Anywhere where I was at or do anything that had to do with data.
So do you think it had to do with where you were?
No. And I'll tell you why. Because my wife moved us to a 10-gig plan a month. And when 10 gigs, you know, 10-gig month plan, when that happened, everything loaded faster.
Oh, how funny.
Fine ever
what since. Plan were you on?
Just the unlimited data plan.
Unlimited was slower than a 10-gig plan.
Yep. And now that I'm on a gig plan, it has sped up. I'm able to bring up whatever I want. The wireless cam loads instantly. It's never been as fast as it ever has been as it is now.
So what do you think Verizon's up to? What do you think they were up to there?
I have no idea. I thought they only slowed you down if you go over your data, apparently.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Well, that's why I'm calling, because I don't think that's correct. I think just for being on the data plan, the unlimited plan, they throw you back. And I didn't know.
It could. If you think about it, that might make sense. You know, in theory, you got to read the fine print. But
it made me mad. If you can't use your phone, I mean, if it's so slow to the point we can't.
Well, I agree. I mean, some people don't care. Yeah. Some people want unlimited, really slow data.
How can you use
I hate it, these I mean, companies. Aren't they awful? So you got to read the fine print. There are different, unquote, unlimited plans on Verizon. And you got to read the fine print. Some of them apparently will, and this is the chat room's telling me this, will throttle you from zero, from byte zero. Some of them you get 5 gigs or 8 gigs, and then they throttle you. So it's in the fine print. So you,
all the time.
I understand. Some of them will throttle you from byte zero, and apparently it says that.
Wow.
Yeah, but who reads those?
I didn't know that.
Who reads the fine print? I didn't know it either. There are five, apparently, on Verizon, 5 unlimited plans. Now, why would you have 5 unlimited plans? Well, the only reason you do that is if they have different things going on with them. So if you go to verizonwireless.com/plans/unlimited, and I'll put a link in our show notes, you can then read what the various limitations are. That is, I think, that's kind of skeezy. There's Start Unlimited, which gives you 480p DVD quality streaming. They downplay it. There's Play More Unlimited, which gives you 720p quality streaming. There's Do More Unlimited, which gives you 480p. And then Unlimited LTE. And then there's Get More Unlimited. And then there's Just Kids. So I'm guessing you probably had the Start Unlimited, all the basics with the unlimited text, talk, and data. And this, by the way, all these companies have gotten in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission for lying about what unlimited is. Because unlimited to me means there's no limit on the speed. But to them, they said, no, what we mean is unlimited number of bytes. You can keep getting bytes forever. We'll never stop you getting bytes. But we may change the speed at any time. So I think you had one that was throttled from point zero. And that's the problem with Verizon. It's very expensive. And so people look at the price and they go, well, I'm not going to pay $90 a line. So $35 a line a month will get you Start Unlimited, but I bet you that's what you had.
It depends on those speeds, too. I mean, I don't know what the speeds are.
Yeah. Well, understand, and this has always been an issue, too. The faster you go, the easier it is to go over your bandwidth cap. So maybe they're saying to themselves, well, we just slow them down so they don't go over the limit or something. Read the fine print, I guess. Oh, it's just shameful, honestly, what these companies do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to talk to Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Scott is not only a home theater geek, he's a contributor at techhive.com. We talk about TVs, hi-fi. They don't call it hi-fi anymore, do they?
No, not really. Audiophilia.
Home theater.
Indeed.
Do you go to CES anymore, or do you still do
that? Oh, yeah. I've got my hotel, and I'm registered to go this year.
Is there going to be anything this year that will be like a new TV technology that we're going to be all excited about?
Well, we're going to see advances in this micro LED technology, which we've talked about before, which is basically super tiny little LEDs, red, green, and blue, forming the actual pixels. So it's a direct emissive display, and it's tiled, so you can put as many tiles together as you want, make as big a screen as you want, or you can afford.
Yeah, you were talking about that. They had a giant screen last year, right? Made of a lot of tiles. Yeah,
it was 200 inches, something like that. I mean, you know, you basically turn your whole wall into a TV.
Well, I'm going to go to CES this year, so I'll see you there.
You?
Yeah,
excellent.
Maybe you can spend some time with me and Aunt. We're going to be going around, and
we're
calling it Aunt and Leo's Excellent CES Adventure.
Very good.
Yeah, I'd love to catch up with you.
Maybe you could show us
some interesting TV stuff.
Very happy to do it.
Mike Heiss in the chat room says it's going to be the launch of ATSC 3.0.
Yes. Well, that could very well be.
What is that?
ATSC 3.0. ATSC stands for Advanced Television Systems Committee.
Oh, dear. Committee is a word I don't like.
I know. Well, ATSC is the body that came up with, and we now use, the digital television transmission standard, ATSC 1.0, which is what now is ubiquitous in the United States. That's how we get our over-the-air television.
So it's over-the-air. It's the antenna
TV. That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. ATSC 3.0 is the next generation. Why isn't it 2.0? I still haven't heard a good answer.
We skipped 2?
They skipped 2 for some reason. They went straight to 3.
That's because the tech industry hates us.
And it's going to be 4K capable. There's going to be a fairly significant online component to it. So there's going to be some IP, Internet Protocol, component to it. So I think they're trying to meld online with over-the-air terrestrial broadcast.
Online with over-the-air. So what do you mean meld? What does that mean? Would that be like interactivity associated with a live
TV? Interactivity.
So you could vote for American Idol while you're watching it using your set-top box kind of
something thing. Something like that, yeah. I don't know the exact details, but it's along those lines. Increasing it. There's also a very strong safety component as well, emergency broadcast stuff. So...
That's interesting. Is there not emergency broadcast stuff in ATSC 1?
Well, there is now. Yeah. But they've improved it and expanded it in some way.
Will it reach out and shake you and say, get out
of the house? You know, we do have now in California, the My Shake app is available, which is supposed to give you a few seconds warning of an
before you
of
have an
earthquake.
Earthquake, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We had one the other day. I did. Of course, I slept through it, as always.
Yeah, we had a 3-point something here in L.A., too.
Mm-hmm.
ATSC 3.0, it's been tested in a couple of markets. Phoenix, I think. Mike would have a better sense of that than I would.
So will I need a new TV? I guess I will.
Well, yes. TVs will.
New tuner. Or a new TV?
You'll need a new tuner. And I think Mike might be referring to the fact that at CES, we will start seeing TVs with ATSC 3.0 tuners in them.
Yeah, built in. It's so interesting. The cable has so subsumed television now. Broadcast is really a redheaded stepchild to cable.
Yes.
For instance, the FCC rejiggered the frequency assignments, and it's been going on over a period of couple of years. It'll end next spring. And people have been calling the show saying, Channel 7, where'd it go?
Exactly. I remember it was last month, I think, I started seeing, maybe 2 months ago, I started seeing on CBS.
Rescan.
As of October 1st or whatever,
Moving.
Yeah.
And I think they do that. You remember the last time there was a big disruption by the FCC, they had to give people, low-income people free digital tuners, or you could get a 50, because it was going to be such a disruption. This time it's like, we'll put some ads on TV. Nobody cares.
Well, the transition from ATSC 1.0 to 3.0, I honestly don't know what their plan is for that transition. I mean, there will come a point at some time when the ATSC 1.0 transmission will stop.
Right.
But I don't think that's going to be for a while.
Right. Honestly, I think with cord cutting, I was just looking at my cable bill, which somehow went up $100 without me even noticing.
What?
Yeah, it's just been inching up this whole time. It's now closer to $300. It was $200 like 6 months ago. I don't understand it. Anyway, I'm not alone. I think more and more people are actually cord cutting, getting rid of the cable, and going back to over-the-air television. If you live near a city, near enough to get TV, it's actually the best deal in TV. Really good high quality, high def.
Yep.
And it costs you nothing. Right. You just have to have an antenna.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Will the existing antennas work with the new ATSC 3.0?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I wouldn't want to guess and be wrong. Mike's
in the chat room. He says 1.0, the current standard, is mandatory for 5 years. Stations will have to keep it up for 5 years.
Yep.
And then 3.0. will be, in other words, voluntary, slowly rolling out over time.
Exactly. And undoubtedly, the ATSC 3.0 tuners that we will probably see in TVs at CES will also be backward compatible. They'll right. be able to get ATSC 1.0.
Those antennas should work unless they change frequencies again.
Well, but even if they do, they're still in the same general range.
Well, maybe. When we went to digital, it really was a good idea to get a an antenna that was on those frequencies as opposed to the bigger wavelength frequencies they had been on. I don't think we'll see that, though. I can't imagine
we'll
see
either.
That.
Yeah. I don't either.
It's just going to be what you get through this through the antenna will have more capabilities, but it should be the same frequencies.
Exactly. 4K, for example.
Yeah.
And the other thing we're going to see a ton of at CES, I am absolutely certain, is 8K.
I'm going to sharpen my eyeballs.
That's right. You got to sharpen your eyeballs. We've seen it for years at CES as a tech demo or as hey, here's what we got in the future. But now the future is here.
I do something weird. I don't go to CES but once every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, really?
Because if you go every year, it's like incremental change. But if you wait 5 years, whoa.
Oh, man.
What did they do? It's all different. So I haven't been. I can't remember when the last time I went. It's probably been 5 years. So I'm looking forward to that.
At least 5 years, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
You go every year.
I do go every year. You know, it's as much to see the product, but at least as much to have FaceTime with people that I normally only communicate with by email or phone.
That's why I'm going to see you.
There you go.
January 7th through 10th in Las Vegas. It's the consumer. Well, it used to be the show formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show. They don't like that for some reason. CES, and we'll be doing live coverage down there, but I'll come back for the radio show because it doesn't go on the weekends. It just goes
Sunday through Friday.
There's pre-show stuff. The show floor opens Tuesday, and then everybody goes home Thursday, and then Friday it's like a ghost town, which is so much fun.
Yeah, exactly right.
The problem is everybody at the booths is like, what do you want?
We want to get out of here.
Yeah, I want to go home. Thank you, Scott Wilkins at TechHive.com. That's where you can read his writing, and you can listen to him every week right here on the Tech Guy Show. Scott, I will talk again. We will talk again next week.
You bet. Thanks.
Take care.
Okay. Yeah. Mendota Tech. Oh, sorry. Are you in Mendota? Isn't that a city in California? A little town in the breadbasket in the San Joaquin Valley. I think I've actually been there. ATSC 3 relies on OFDM modulation as opposed to 8VSB modulation in 1.0. So they're using a different modulation scheme. But again, all antennas care about is the wavelength. So, but their tuners will have to be completely different. Exactly right. That's exactly right. Hey, Loquacious. Good to see you. Mendota Tech is in Mendota. I actually did some sound level measuring there. There was a construction project, and a company I worked for hired They were hired by Mendota to do some noise measurements on the street where the construction was going to go. They wanted to get a baseline. So I happened to be in Northern California at the time, and they called me and said, hey, can you swing by Mendota and do a measurement on the street? So I said, sure, why not? So I went and did that. So anyway, that's that story. I will be heading out this afternoon. Got another gig today, tonight, and tomorrow, which I'm real happy about. Anybody in L.A. wants to come out for something very strange. It's called Prophetic Spirit. It's a whole theater piece with music, dancers, a singer, and a narrator. It was a piece written 50 years ago by Paul Arnold. And it was performed only once on a live TV show, which featured the Monkees. But it's not monkey music, believe me. It's very strange. But very interesting. And I'm playing shofar, didgeridoo, and alto recorder.
Was it on a monkey's song?
No, it wasn't. It was on a special called something like The Fourth Dimension of 33 and a Third Revolutions of Per Monkey or something like that. It was a so weird strange. Live special show about
the monkeys.
And this piece was played on that show. So, and that was the only performance. Now, 50 years later, the woman who sang the vocal part on the recording is going to be there. She flew in from Israel to do this show.
Wow.
It's really interesting.
How neat.
Yeah, it's really pretty cool.
33 and a third revolutions per monkey.
Yes, I believe that's what that show was called.
Wow. Wow. You want to stick around for the top?
Yeah, sure.
Happy All right. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line one, Mark Tustin, California. Hello, Mark.
Hey, it was fun taking your picture for a couple hours. You were a bundle of awesome.
Where was that?
At the...
This is Mark from Tustin.
Yeah.
So we did an event in Boston. Mark, who lives in Southern California, flew all the way to Boston for the event. And then I guess it's what all the kids do these days, the selfie line, right? I used to sometimes when I do events, I'd have printed photographs and sign them, like at a Comic-Con kind of a thing. But lately, I haven't had to bring photographs or Sharpies. People just come up and they say, can we take a selfie? But the problem is that's a lot of work, and especially if you let people do it. So Mark very kindly stepped in and said, give me your camera. Stand in the light. Shut up. Smile.
I didn't mean to be rude.
You weren't rude. You were brisk. You kept the line moving. And you know what? I'm glad you did, because it took 2 hours to do all those selfies, a lot of selfies. So thank you.
Yeah, but just so people know, you really are that nice. The entire time, you never rolled your eyes. You were interested in each person.
I was rolling my eyes in the back of my head. I'm very grateful. I'm lucky. I mean, I'm just some geek on the radio, and people actually come to see the event, and then they want a picture with me? What is that? That's nuts. So I'm just very grateful. I feel very fortunate. So believe me, I'm not going to be dismissive of anybody that wants to get a picture. It's fun. I mean, I'm not Elizabeth Warren famous. She did a selfie line, what was it, for 4 or 5 hours the other day. I'm not that famous. It's funny, actually, I'm kind of acting like this is new, but I have watched this change. I started doing personal appearances, as silly as that might sound, in 1999, I think, with Tech TV. In fact, we didn't think anybody'd show up. My co-host Kate Botello and I went to an event in Las Vegas in the parking lot of a CompUSA. That'll tell you how long ago that was. And we got out of the rental car. We drove over from the airport, and she grabbed my arm, said, Leo, there are people here. We had no idea if anybody would show up. And in those days, it was pretty much autographs. People had cameras, but they didn't have camera phones yet. And I've watched it change. I remember going through a really awful period where people had digital cameras like the Sony Mavica that saved the photo to a floppy disk. So it was a long... They go, okay, hold on. Don't move. Okay. Got the picture. So we've gone through some bad times, a lot of slow cameras. But now with camera phones, everybody's got a camera phone. And that seems to be just the way to do it, is a selfie. Let's get a selfie. I love it. It's really fun. So thank you. And Mark, you volunteered. I can't believe you came out from Tustin, first of all. So thank you for that. And then you volunteered to do it. And I really appreciate you helping out. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah. And by the way, I didn't mean to start trouble with that whole comment to Lisa I made about, you know, you going off to Mars.
Was that you?
I talked to her before the
event. I know she loved it.
Great business advice after.
She loved it, Mark. She held that to her heart. Mark told her, if Leo ever goes to Mars, which I think maybe I said once, you know, it'd be kind of fun to be the last, you know, basically it's a one-way trip. I'm old enough that maybe they'll send me and I'll get to stay there. And you said to her, if she ever goes to Mars, there's a bunch of guys waiting in line for you. And she just loved that. Thank you, Mark. That she was very flattered.
Oh, good.
A little creeped out, but very flattered.
That's what I say. I did not mean to creep her out.
No, you didn't creep her out. She just thought it was funny.
How nice
you know
is.
What? Lisa loves geeks. Otherwise, she wouldn't be married to me. And so she was in heaven hanging out with all the geeks at that event. It was a really fun event. We'll do more of those, by the way. LastPass wants us to do a couple more next year. We're talking some other advertisers want to bring us out. So I think it's just a matter of time before the Leo Laporte Tech Guy World Tour.
Cool. Hey, I had the question, which is hopefully quick, but you made me, you, think of one more about TVs.
Okay.
The first one is you know how you and Steve Gibson would say you need to do a read on an SSD every once in a while just to keep it going? Because I have a MacBook Air that just is running slow, but it's got 46 gigs free. So I don't think it's a low disk space, but I have no idea what to use on a Mac. You know, on a PC, you can just use SpinRite or Western Digital in Windows. You can...
Yeah, the reason for this is something you don't, I don't think, need to do it on a Mac. The reason for this is something called Trim, T-R-I-M, and it has to do with the wear leveling algorithms used on solid-state drives to keep them from burning out. Solid-state drives don't do garbage collection, so as you use them, files occupy space, but the space isn't re-released or reallocated properly. You know what? The details escape me. But the point is, and Alan Malventano, who's at PC Perspective, actually he just took a job at Intel, so now he's at Intel. But he was the pioneer of SSDs, and he was the one who discovered that if you simply do a defrag on an SSD, which is counterintuitive, a solid-state drive shouldn't need to be defragmented like a spinning drive does. It makes no sense. But what it does do, it triggers the controller on the solid-state drive and says, hey, do a trim. SpinRite will do the same thing. Anything that really accesses the hard drive, the SSD, a lot, will apparently trigger the controller to go trim. Trim is just a garbage collection routine it runs through. It doesn't want to be doing it all the time. It could waste time. But you don't, in my understanding is you do not need to do it on the Macintosh. If an operating system understands that, it will do trim itself. You don't need to trim. So I would search for trim in Mac OS and see. You may need to trigger it. Oh, yeah. Okay, here's the deal. I guess Apple's solid states trim automatically. But on Mac OS, especially older Mac OS, you might need to get a program to do it on third-party, non-Apple drives. Now, I suspect this might have changed. But if you Google this, I'm looking at an article that says, enable trim for any SSD in Yosemite or later. And so it sounds like Apple makes trim available to all SSDs starting with Yosemite. It now supports third-party SSDs, so I think you shouldn't have to do it. So your slowdown is probably not related to that garbage collection issue.
All right, and then I'll have to do whatever that utility
is. Now, if it's an external drive or a Thunderbolt drive, then you don't do trim.
No, it's built in. It's just the Mac boots up. It takes minutes to boot up a MacBook Air, and it's a solid-state drive.
It shouldn't. Yeah, it really shouldn't. It should be pretty quick, yeah. Well, there's a command, TrimForce. So, capital TrimForce. So the command on the terminal would be sudo TrimForce enable. That should be enabled, but maybe it isn't, and so that might be worth a try just to see. And then what'll happen is the operating system will, Let me know, Mark, if you notice a speed up after that. It could very well be trim.
And can I ask?
Go ahead.
Oh, just simply, I have had a Windows 7, turned it into a DVR with NPVR.
Smart.
And everything was working fine, and then I upgraded to Windows 10. It got a little grainier, but I lived with it. But now, you know how the way MPEGs, I guess, work is you get the whole screen, and then for a second or two, it just updates the pixels?
Yeah.
And that's getting really grainy, and, you know, I can't even watch stuff single speed anymore. I normally watch stuff. I'm the one that watches stuff double speed.
Is this the same computer?
No. This is the old the Dell.
Oh, this is the Windows 7 machine, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's just slow. What you might want to do, and I would look into this, it'll be in the settings for your video card, is, mm-hmm. believe it or not, disable hardware acceleration. Not enable, but disable. Do you have a GPU? Cool. Okay. Do you have a GPU?
No, it's, you know, all the built-in stuff.
It might be, this is a weird fix, but, and it's a long explanation, but hardware acceleration was a system used in older machines so they could blast the video onto the screen, not go through the card. If you have a setting, switch it. Just see if it gets better. That's, I guess, my advice to you. I turned off my mic, no wonder. No, I'm going, does he hear me? No, he doesn't. The mic's off.
Now I do.
Beautiful Catalina Island in the background of our clock today.
So nice.
Because it's Mac OS 10 Catalina. There's your time. It's all yours, my friend.
Thank you so very much. Hello, everybody. Nice to see you. Beatmaster asked if I had any thoughts on Scorsese's comments on comic book movies not being cinema. And I have to say, I saw those headlines, but I didn't have a chance to actually click in and read specifically what he said. But just on the basis of comic book movies aren't cinema, sorry, I do not agree. Now, Beatmaster says, if it weren't Scorsese, that'd be one thing, but he has some insight. Well, sure he does. He's an auteur. He's a movie maker. So he knows about cinema. But this is an opinion. And my opinion differs from his. I think that it is cinema, or can be. Well, it depends on how you define cinema, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. I think saying that comic book movies aren't cinema is just too elitist, too snobby for me. You know, basically anything you show in a cinema is cinema. I mean, at some level, I mean, sure, you can argue about quality and whether or not it, you know, adds to culture or society or whatever. But I would not go so far as to say comic book movies are not cinema. Sorry. Let's see. Oh, Lawn Dog here made a good point about antennas. I'm sure marketing people for antennas will come up with a scheme to tell you that you need an ATSC-3 certified antenna. Yeah, I expect you're right because these companies always do that. And in fact, we may see WineGuard or Mohu or some of the big antenna companies at CES starting to tout that. But again, I really don't think that's a problem. somebody else asked me a question here in the chat room about image retention and burn-in on cell phones. Now, I don't know much about cell phones. I do know that some of them use OLED screens. The others must use LCD. I don't know what other technology they could be using. And I made the point of making sure you know the difference between burn-in and image retention. Burn-in is technically what you would refer to as something permanent. Image retention is temporary and can be erased. And he wanted to know about whether or not you could reverse the effect of it. And apparently he's been shopping for used Samsung Note 5s. I'm trying to look here for it. And he has noticed image retention or burn-in on these phones. I don't know whether the Note 5 uses OLED or not. OLED is more susceptible to image retention and burn-in than LCD. Neither of them are completely immune, even LCD. But if it's image retention, it can theoretically be reversed by displaying certain types of images that would exercise all the pixels equally. And in some cases, I've seen examples of that are kind of like color noise. So random noise, like you would see in the old days, if you mistuned your TV, right? If you could tune the TV to between channels, you'd see all this snow, right? Well, I've seen Blu-rays that have that. I think there's one. I think there's one on AVS Forum that do have that. That's the image, except that it's in color, and all the little sparkles are different colors. And so that's one thing to do. Many TVs have a built-in function that basically flood the image with white and then I think scan a black stripe through it. And that's supposed to exercise all the pixels equally and turn them on and off and get rid of image retention. I don't, on TVs, I haven't noticed it to be a particular problem. I have an OLED. I have a Sony OLED that I use. That's my daily viewer. And I've had it now for several years, and it has no image retention that I can see. I don't keep it on one channel with a, say, a news ticker along the bottom or a bug in the channel ID bug in the corner, you know, for days at a time or weeks or months at a time. If I did, yeah, maybe I'd start seeing some image retention. I do hear that companies that put OLEDs up in their trade show booths like CES or CEDIA, someplace like that, can get image retention because they're showing the same thing, you know, for 12 hours a day over a weekend. And if there's a static element in there somewhere, then yeah, you could potentially see that. But for a phone, I honestly don't know what the answer is. Somebody here suggested, well, you could burn a Blu-ray that has one of those types of patterns on it and then play it on your phone. Burn. I mean, rip a Blu-ray and then somehow play it on your phone. Sure, you could do that. And that might very well work. I've never tried that. But interesting idea. Tech in San Diego, good to see you. I do hope to get down to San Diego sometime. It's actually a place near and dear to my heart because my family, when I was growing up, we used to take vacations to San Diego. My dad was stationed there in the Navy during World War II before he got shipped off to Alaska to the Aleutian Islands. With the rest of the Navy Music School instructors. He was an instructor at the Navy Music School in San Diego, and he got they closed the school at one point and shipped all the instructors off to Adak Island in the Aleutians to be the band there for when bigwigs flew through. But anyway, we spent a lot of time in San Diego. I spent a lot of time there as a kid, and since then, you know, it's a nice vacation spot, a couple hours drive from L.A. Lawn dog, yeah, I remember digital ready headphones. What the heck does that mean? It means they were marketing it for CDs and stuff like that. Oh, it's Keith 43. Sorry, Keith, didn't remember the name of who it was that was asking me. You've noticed it a lot on used Note 5s. All seem to have that. Couldn't tell you. It must be an OLED screen, first of all. The iPhone XS is an OLED screen.
Thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. I'm off next week. You have a pre-record.
And I won't see you for a month.
For a month. Have a wonderful trip. I can't wait to hear about it.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's a photographer's dream.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Petra is on my bucket list.
Oh, I can't wait. And Jerusalem, I've never been there.
Oh, so awesome.
Can't wait. Yeah.
Stay safe, man.
Well, I decided not to go in the helicopter over Jerusalem, but I'm going to let Lisa do it. See you, Scott.
All right, see ya.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also go to our website at any time, techguylabs.com. That has all the show notes. So anything I talk about, any links I mention, those will all go there. Thanks to James DeRuvo writing it all down. Thank you, James. Techguylabs.com. We also put audio and video from the show there after the fact. It's free. No sign-up necessary. We just put it there so you don't have to write anything down while you're listening. Techguylabs.com. Let's go to line three, Clinton in Shelby, North Carolina. Hello, Clinton.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. Love your show. I have a question. I'm a small business owner here, and what I'm doing is I'm looking for a non-cloud solution to where I can organize the customer notes right with their contacts and any of the notes that I take while doing the job. And some of the requests that they make, and organize this by the customer and by the date, you know, and specifically for Windows and a non-cloud solution.
So what you're talking about is CRM, Customer Relation Management. And, of course, it's the most important thing in almost every business, right? If you have customers, you want to maintain your relationship. You want to kind of keep notes on what they've bought, what they've done, communications you've had with them. If you do sales, it's even more important. So CRM is a massive category. The king in CRM is, and I'm sure you've heard of them, is called Salesforce. And that's actually what we use in our business. We have kind of did a roll your own thing for a long time. Eventually my wife who runs the business said, no, we got to do Salesforce because that's what everybody uses. But that is also perhaps overkill for a small business. You know, I remember back in the day, people used so Salesforce is very much cloud, and almost everything you're going to talk about these days is cloud. Back in the day, there was a contact manager called ACT that was really popular that did all of that stuff. And, things like a tickler file. So if you called a guy, a client, and you wrote him an email, then it would tickle you in a month to say follow up, that kind of thing. And you would set the time and all that. And ACT was very popular. And I remember when ACT went away, it was the number one question on the show for some time, which is, well, now what do I do? So it ranges from just, a simple contact manager with notes and maybe ticklers and that kind of thing, all the way up to these big databases that Salesforce and its, brethren represent, the CRM software. There's some simpler stuff you could take a look at. Why do you not want cloud-based?
Well, I'm okay with cloud-based, but I prefer to have the stuff just locally. And actually, I was going to mention this other thing, which, is kind of cloud-based. I was going to ask you, how can I create the fillable forms, like the custom forms where I can just enter the data on the go I could retrieve that later. So, that does integrate the cloud aspect. So, may have to get over the whole no cloud thing. Just
a lot of people getting over the no cloud thing these days because there are certain advantages to cloud. Part of the reason cloud started is because we all have so many devices. We have phones, we have laptops, we have tablets, we have the desktop at work, we have the desktop at home. And if stuff is in the cloud, then it's available to all those devices, always updated. So that's something that has really changed. And as a result, more people are open to the idea of cloud. But almost every solution will have kind of a hybrid. So you have stuff locally, but you might have stuff in the cloud for just those purposes. The closest thing to ACT, in fact, it's the same age as ACT, is a program called Goldmine. Same idea as ACT. It starts really, it's a small business CRM. It starts really with your contact list, but it allows you to do a lot more, including custom fields and templates, which is something you kind of wanted, it sounded like. I would take a look at Goldmine. There's an open source product that's very popular, but I think maybe too complicated for just a simple small business needs. That's called Sugar CRM. We have an advertiser in our podcast that I think is quite good called Monday, monday.com. It does very much the same kinds of things. It's really a matter of kind of almost what your taste is, but also how deep in the weeds you want to get, how much customization you want to do, and how much you need.
Right.
I'm a big fan of, it's more cloudy than not, Zoho, Z-O-H-O, is a great kind of, it's kind of like Office for small business. And so they have CRM as well, but it integrates within their word processor, contact list management, spreadsheets, all the other things Zoho does. That's another one, Zoho.
And I've actually been hit deep in your sponsors over the past few months. So they've all been
stellar.
Especially Capterra and we have Simply Safe. Well, love them. And,
go to now that you're looking for CRM, you can just search for it on Capterra. That's a great place to go, and that's free. And you'll get a long list of CRM programs. It's a very hot category. Those are just the few that come to mind that I've played with and used. And it really just kind of does depend on how complicated you want to get it, honestly. And my advice to you is make it as simple as possible. Because too complicated, just overwhelming, and you spend a lot of time messing around with it instead of just using it. But I think, on the other hand, people will say, oh, yeah, but you'll pretty much outgrow it if it's not complicated. I don't know. Your business better than I do.
Well, thank you so much, Leo. You've been a great...
My pleasure. I'm so glad you called. This is... When you get to the point where you're using a CRM, that means your business is booming. It's doing well. When it's a small business... And I remember when we started our podcast business, you know, you keep everything in your head. I know all our sponsors. I know all the people involved. But as the business grows, it becomes harder and harder. And you want to do a better job, too, of servicing customers, potential clients. You want to be more responsive to them. What you really want is for them to think they're the only customer. They're the only client, right? And, of course, they're not. But you want them to feel that way. And the best way to do it, that's why it's called customer relationship management. It's about making them feel like they're the one. And then there are other, you know, each CRM program has other pieces built into it, like to-do lists, project managers, things like that. Monday is very focused on that. It's as much about workflows as keeping track of clients. Goldmine is really essentially a beefed up contact manager like ACT was. And then there's everywhere in between. And of course, there's Salesforce, which I don't even, I look at it and I go, I don't know what to do with this. That's well beyond my pay grade. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. Dan in La Habra Heights is next. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo. I was just listening to your conversation about CRMs. I wanted you to know I still use ACT. It's still being published.
It's still out there? I apologize to all the ACT folks. I thought it was long gone.
No, not by a long shot. They're still introducing new versions pretty much annually.
Oh, that's
and I
fantastic.
Still use it.
What's the company? Do you remember?
I think it's Sage.
Sage sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. ACT! ACT.com.
Absolutely.
The problem is ACT was created in a pre-Google era, and you can't search just for ACT because you'll never find it. It's too generic a name. ACT Growth Suite. Oh, yeah, it looks great. So you like it and use it?
I do. That's my only CRM. I don't use Salesforce. I have used Salesforce, and there's nothing wrong with it. But I've been using ACT since the year 2000. And
yeah. It's been around forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, well, I apologize to ACT. the news of your death was greatly exaggerated. I apologize. Swift Page is the company. I'm wondering if it got sold and went through a couple of – I have a feeling it went through some ups and downs at some time. So, all right.
I suspect that it did, but it still serves me, and I thought it might serve your caller.
And they have a free trial, so you can go to ACT.com and – give it a shot.
There you go. Yep.
I'm a nitwit. Thank you. Thank you, Dan, for the correction. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. Have all a right. great day.
Take care. You too. Yeah, ACT was the king of the hill. And really, it started as a contact manager, as did Goldmine. I used Goldmine for a long time. I didn't use any of the CRM features. It was before there was even a term CRM, I think. We didn't know from CRM back in the day. Todd in Portland, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, Todd. Welcome.
I got to preface the call by saying, whenever I call tech support, I'm always the guy that gets, I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Aren't you lucky?
I'm always that guy. So,
honestly, I feel like the main reason to call tech support is to see if anybody else is having this problem.
Well, yeah. But when I hear, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's not encouraging, is it?
Laugh.
Yeah. Well, I never heard that before.
Anyway,
what are you? What is your symptom?
Yeah, here's what I got. I have a project I've been working on. I install surveillance systems, and I have a client that has different remote areas on the property, and I have had really no problem setting up wireless links between those areas, all using a TP-Link product.
Nice.
And it's worked really well.
What's the longest distance that you've been able to cover?
Oh, probably a half mile.
Really?
they work really well, and they're really easy to set up.
So nominally, Wi-Fi's not supposed to go more than maybe 300 feet. Usually it's half that. So, but on the other hand, it is a line-of-sight technology, and if there's nothing between the access point and the most distant building, I guess it could go half a mile. That's a long way.
Well,
do you use special antennas?
No, it's just set up with a wireless link.
That's awesome.
And you can I have to dial down the power sometimes because it is rated 30 miles or something.
Oh, you must be using some special TP link then.
No. These are wireless links. They're like $45 a piece. And
30 miles? No.
I'm telling you, that's what it says. I've never been out that far, but they work really, really well. But here's my issue. I have one link that I've been trying to set up. I'm running it it's at a storage container facility, and some of these containers, the stacks can be 5 high. So there's a lot of steel in the area, but I haven't had any problems. This one link, I've got it set up in a storage container at the far end of the facility, and I've got it powered by solar cells, and it goes into battery, of course, and everything. But from that point to another point where I have a link already set up, it's losing 90% of the speed. And what I end up with is when I'm trying to upload or download the video from those cameras, it times out because it's too slow.
Yeah.
And it's not running 10/100, it's running like 10/10 when it gets there. And nobody's been able to explain why.
So you say there's a lot of steel around. Of course, Wi-Fi is microwave, and so it does not go through metal at all. So you may be getting some echoes or bouncing that is interfering. So understand, it's got a line of sight, perhaps, but Wi-Fi is omnidirectional. Depends what you're using. You can get more directional antennas. But if it says have maybe a 90-degree field of and it's bouncing stuff off of metal, it's going to bounce off the metal into the path of the line of sight. It could interfere with it, cancel the waves.
I thought of that too, but there's only containers on one side of the path. It is an absolute straight line of sight.
Hmm. I wonder if you could, have you tried kind of turning it just to see if you can get better results by moving slightly or turning it slightly?
I've done that. I have.
How high is it? You've raised it up a little bit, right? I mean, you don't want it. You want to get it as high as you can reasonably get it.
It's about 20.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Feet up on a pole.
Oh yeah, that's good. The ground is not interfering with it. I got several hundred radio station engineers listening, going, "Oh yeah, tell me about it." RF radio frequency is kind of a black art, a voodoo. And sometimes you get interference in ways you just didn't expect. It also could be, is it a repeater or is it the Ethernet connected directly to the base unit?
It's going from point from the remote to a pole, and I've got it going into another transmitter, which has a perfectly good line of sight, perfectly good connection. And I have one video camera there.
Well, do remember that if you're not terminating the internet into that access point, it's got a backhaul. And so this was always the problem with Wi-Fi extenders is, this is what mesh kind of solved. Wi-Fi extenders aren't full duplex. They would spend half the time talking to the backhaul and then half the time talking to the next unit along the line. So Wi-Fi extenders always halved the total throughput. If you've got multiple extenders, you're gonna have an even worse interaction. So you're only gonna get full throughput from that Wi-Fi access point if you've got Ethernet going directly into it. I'm looking online. TP-Link does make and must be what you're using long range outdoor Wi-Fi transmitters. They say 15 kilometers plus, which is pretty impressive. I'd hate to be anybody in that neighborhood, however, because I wonder how it affects the neighbor's Wi-Fi. Yeah, I'm not going to say I've never heard of that before. I'm just going to say this is a complicated issue that has a lot of moving parts. And so it's, I could think of a few things as I passed along to you, but I can't for sure tell you what's going on with that one. Maybe somebody listening can. I don't know. Johnny Jett, travel guru, coming up in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I should probably do a little mention of our sponsor. I have been lax, but you know what? I love Capterra. In fact, didn't one of our callers say how much he loved Capterra? If you use software in your business, yeah, remember we were talking about CRM software. If you use software in your business, many of us do, sometimes we use software that's so old just because that's what we've got or that's what, you know, they bought way back when. There is amazing business software out there. And Capterra is the right place to find it. A directory, free directory of the best software in every category, 700 categories, thousands of programs, everything from big line of business software like CRM to individual, like yoga studio management and individual business software. And because Capterra has more than 1 million reviews, real reviews, verified reviews from actual users, you're never in a mystery about whether this program's good or whether it'll do what you want it to do. You just read the reviews. There's 1,000 new reviews every day. I honestly think that's because Capterra is free. And people are so grateful that Capterra exists, they leave a review. That's all you need to do. You don't have to even do that, but I think people do. I love Capterra. Capterra believes software makes the world a better place because software can help every organization become a better version of itself. Why suffer with old, bad software when you can use Capterra? 1 million reviews, easy comparison, every program you could ever want. Millions of people use Capterra every month to find the right tools for your business. I got to underscore this, though. It's free. Not freemium. They're not going to hold out their hand. It is free. Capterra.com/tech guy. Find the tools to make an informed decision for your business. Capterra. Capterra.com/tech guy. Capterra software selection simplified. Thank you, Capterra, for supporting our podcast. Thank you for going to Capterra.com/tech guy. Capterra. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, breathing the mountain air because he is a traveling man, our travel guru. He joins us every week to help us travel like a rock star using technology. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. Now, did you travel this week? You were warning me.
I finally got back to the skies after 2 months. It's actually the longest I've ever been on the ground since in my adult life, I think.
No. Because you, for a while, you didn't fly at all, right?
Let's say since I graduated college.
Okay. Because you went through special brain surgery to eliminate your fear of flying.
Well, I used to be afraid to fly between the ages of 17 and 21.
Oh.
And then when I went to school at 21, and then I started flying a lot because I went to school in California. I grew up in Connecticut. I dated a girl whose parents lived all around the world, including Hong Kong.
Wow. And
that was my first international trip, and that's what really gave me the travel bug.
As they say, cherchez la femme. Look for the woman. It means look for the woman. Behind every great travel writer, there is a woman.
I see that. Well, I'm sure my wife's going to love that one. Hopefully she's not upstairs.
No, she's the woman now. She's the woman.
My girlfriend Sally in college, her parents were amazing, and she was amazing.
Shh.
And
I'm trying to get you out of this hole you dug.
You know, it's too late.
So, Johnny.
Yes.
Help us travel like a rock star.
All right. So this week, I took to the skies, and actually I flew American. I have my most miles on American right now, and they just came out.
Do you like American International? Is that a good way to go? Because I'm trying to decide how to get to Germany next year.
It depends on the plane. So, you know, unfortunately, the flight crew on American seems bitter. They're not very good. The food's not that good, but they have some good seats.
They're bitter.
The 777-300.
Why are they bitter? Yeah,
I don't blame them. I mean, their management is really bad. And, you know, for example, when you board a plane, flight attendants are not being paid until that door closes and it pushes back.
Oh, please.
They don't get paid a dime.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So if you're delayed 5 hours on the ground and the door's still open, they're not being paid.
Oh, that's terrible. But, is that just American?
No, almost all of them are the same.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to give them a tip. Say this is for until they close the doors so you don't starve.
Well, I usually bring them a bag of chocolates, but yeah. So
unfortunately, international
carriers are better than the U.S. carriers. I would definitely choose an international one over a U.S. Unfortunately, but again, it depends on the route and the plane.
Monday, I am flying United to Athens, Greece. But should I bring chocolates?
Yeah, they would like it. Yeah,
I'll bring chocolates. I will.
So I just bring a bag of like Hershey's Kisses or something.
There's See's chocolates at the airport. I'm getting them the good stuff.
Yeah, but they're gonna get ripped off. You're gonna get ripped off there. But
oh.
you can go to like Target and buy.
That's for the grandmas like $10. Forgot to get a gift for the grandkids, and they're on the way home, and they go, oh, "Darn, I gotta get something," and they buy $100 box of chocolates. Okay,
right. But the my general rule is you bring like 3 bags, one for the gate agents, one for the flight attendants, and one for yourself. But
one for yourself. I'm not, I can't do that. Okay. I'll bring
that's
two.
A whole nother story. But my point about American is make sure you download their app if you're flying them. Also United and Delta, because they've been doing this. The technology is once they scan the first boarding pass, they then alert you that boarding has begun. And if you're a freaking flyer like I am, and sometimes you're in the lounge or you're just running behind because you think the flight's going to board 30 minutes in advance, which they normally say, but these days they're all trying to get the planes out on time.
So sometimes they start an hour early. I couldn't believe it.
Well, I don't know about an hour, but they will start early. And the problem
45
is
minutes early. Yeah.
If you're a freaking flyer and you show up and they've already started boarding, you're not going to get space for your bag. No. So,
I know that's a real
problem. So having
problem.
This technology is great, and it works. It worked great. I was right by the desk when they started boarding, and sure enough, the moment they announced boarding, I got the notification on my app.
I have the American app on here. I'm logging in right now, and I'm going to put my.
But United and Delta has been doing this already, so Americans just catching up to them. But that's it's good to see that they're catching up.
I actually I always when I fly, I have the app for the airline. You know, one of the reasons you put it on the phone or even better the iPad is, I've noticed a number of airlines, maybe Delta and JetBlue, they have entertainment in the app. You don't see it until you're on the plane.
For sure, American too, Air Canada, Rouge. I mean, you need to download the apps before you get on the plane.
Yeah,
because. A lot of times they'll even say it while you're on the ground. They say, listen, download the app.
Yeah.
Because our flights do not have in-flight entertainment systems.
That's so fine that with me. Way, they're saving money. I'd rather watch my iPad anyway.
Yeah, well, but you need to have the app. Otherwise, you're going to be – you're just staring at the seat in front of you or reading a book if you even brought one.
Reading a book like a savage.
Yeah.
like a caveman. No, the worst is having to read the magazine in the seat back.
Well, I have a couple columns in some of them.
But
so
there's
careful.
This guy named Johnny Jett. He really is good. He writes really well.
But another thing is this week, I went down to Florida with Embraer. They're a Brazilian company.
Oh, how was that?
And I got to go on one of their brand new E95-E2.
They make those commuter jets. I've been on their regional jets.
The regional jets.
Yeah.
The regional. Yeah. Actually, a third of the flights in America are regional jets. And what I love about them is that it's 2 and 2. There's no middle seat. But they took some media up to the NASA space shuttle landing.
Ooh.
So we got to land at TTS airport, which very few people do. When we landed, we had to go through security. We got a private tour of the Kennedy Space Center by an astronaut. But the cool thing about it. Let me regress. They put us up at the Westin Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So when I checked out, they're like, oh, by the way, it's a $44.07 resort fee. I'm like, I arrived last night at 10 o'clock at night, and I'm leaving at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Freaking resort.
And you're still charging me a resort fee. They're like, yes. I was like, let me speak to the manager. Oh. Manager's like, comes out. He's like, sorry, we can't do anything about it. I go, you know what? I'm going to destroy you on social media. This is ridiculous.
He's doing it right now on the radio. You're being destroyed.
Well, it's just
I hate these resort fees. Just raise the
when
price.
They don't disclose them.
Yeah,
and I knew I wasn't even paying for it. I knew the client would pay for it. It's just the principle that I arrive late at night, leave early in the morning, and they're still charging me $44. So there's a website called killresortfees.com.
I'm in.
So this teaches you all about resort fees, how you can fight them. You know, obviously you can boycott places, but unfortunately these days. Everyone is charging a resort fee, or they'll call it an urban city fee if you're in New York City. It's ridiculous. And it's just a way for the big hotelers not to have to pay the third parties, because whenever you book a hotel through like Expedia or Hotel Tonight, they got to give a good percentage to them. Wow. And it's also a way they get around without getting taxed so much.
So
it's a big sticking point for travelers, because I despise resort fees. I do my best to stay out of some of the hotels that have them, but it's almost impossible. But I think, fortunately, I think this is one thing that our representatives, both Republican and Democrats, agree on, that it is ridiculous.
Well, what they're doing is they're raising the room cost without having it.
Disclosing it,
because everybody uses these, you know, Expedia and these online sites, hotels.com, to book. So they're all just looking at that top line number, and they're not. That, you know, that way they can have a low top line number and really make the room $50
for more. Sure. Actually, I think one of the biggest offenders is Circus in Vegas. They charge like $28 for a room, but then you get there and I think it's a $32 resort fee.
Vegas is famous for resort fees.
They are. Yeah. But to always find out, and because it's not always simply disclosed. And actually, I did not even know about it because someone else booked the room for me. And so, and when I checked in, they never said anything. It was when I checked out. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So I'm
Johnny
giving it to
Jet,
him right now.
The angry traveler. He's angry. Do not mess with the Jet. It's like the Jets are going to have the day.
I like the fight for the little guy. And
fight
I
for the little
guy.
That's right. Yes. You weren't even paying for it, and you're still fighting for it.
Heck yeah.
DonnieJet.com. That's his website. He's on Twitter, Johnny Jet. He's got a giant megaphone on Instagram, Johnny Jet. And every week right here on the Tech Guy Show. Ooh, I oughta. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, line one. Stan in St. Louis. Hello, Stan.
Hello. Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm Stan R. Again from St. Louis, Unix and Linux user.
Oh, yeah. We talked a while ago.
Yeah, thank you so much. Everybody enjoyed your comments and so forth, and I've been enjoying your comments between shows. I hope you have a really good vacation time.
Thank you.
Everybody will be missing you, even though you may think that they don't, but that just means you train them well.
They don't miss me at all. I will miss them.
Yeah.
My wife knows that when I'm on vacation, I end up doing a two-hour show every afternoon. So the poor woman has to sit and listen to me gas. So,
I wanted to say that I'm a happy SpinRite owner and an annual IT Pro V TV subscriber.
Well, you know, Stan, I don't require that you participate and sponsor with our sponsors, but boy, I sure like it when I hear that. Thank you.
Oh yeah, I'm 70 years old, and with the groups that we Unix and Linux groups here in St. Louis, I just enjoy keeping up, and it keeps me.
So you're not even doing it for
things every day.
You're not even doing it for professional reasons. You're just doing it because you love it.
That's right. And
nice.
I've loved it for years.
Nice.
Now I need your phenomenal memory, because my Google foo, search foo on the internet sucks really bad.
Okay.
My problem is I've got a graphic display problem that I think is hardware, but I'm interested in describing what the problems are, so I can ask for other comments and help and so forth. So do you know of a website that gives graphical examples and descriptions of different graphic problems?
When you say graphic problems, what specific content are you want to do here?
Well, the screen is...
There's issues on the screen, and you want to see a site that says, if it looks like this, do this?
Yeah, or just to actually describe the kind of problem. The only term I'm familiar with is the screen tearing.
Yeah.
They talk about where it does one line across.
What are you seeing? What are you getting? Maybe Leo's memory will...
Because
I don't know of a site where you'd... That's a great idea, though. Somebody should put some examples up.
Well, it starts out with little square blocks, and then the little square blocks become oblong blocks, and eventually the whole screen gets filled up with oblong blocks. I've never seen an example of this anyplace else before.
Is it only when you're watching video, or is it all the time?
All the time. I suspect it's hardware, because it happens after a certain length of time, which varies. So...
Oh, And it's that's interesting. So as it gets hotter, perhaps something happens, or
yeah, and it's the built-in thing because it's not an additional card. I always buy the wrong hardware when I try to replace them.
So now, don't beat yourself up. I recently needed to buy a hard drive replacement for one of my devices. It required a 2.5-inch hard drive, and not once but twice I bought a 3.5-inch hard drive. And I kept getting the wrong size and thinking, what am I doing wrong? I keep clicking the wrong link or something.
Well, you know, I always tried to buy, leading edge of stuff, and it's always the one that, like Betamax and stuff.
Yeah, that's a problem one. Six signs. This is from techjunkie.com. The chat room posted this. Six signs your graphics card has problems and may be dying. Stuttering, screen glitches if you're playing a game and watching a movie and suddenly you start seeing tearing, you know that one, or weird colors appearing all over the screen, your graphics card might be dying. Does it go back to normal when you restart it?
It goes back to good when if I shut the system off and wait 10 minutes and come back, it's fine for either 10 or 15 or 30 minutes. It's no telling.
Do you have a dedicated graphics card in this computer?
No, it's internal. But
motherboard video. You don't have a separate, in the old days you'd have a sound card and you'd have a video card. You don't have a separate video card you're connected to. It's on the motherboard, the connector.
But what's interesting to me is if I come in remotely, like Linux Armenia or X2Go,
yeah,
not a problem.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it's only when you're running locally. And what operating system?
Linux Mint, Mate version.
Okay. It's interesting. So you use some other screen as a server, some other X window installation as a server. Now, actually, that makes sense because that's your video card's doing less. It's just playing back video when you do that, as opposed, I know it doesn't feel like it feels interactive, but it's not doing the same thing to render that display. So I'm going to go with the video card is messed up, the video subsystem.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a question of just, especially in Linux, a driver that's not compatible.
I wouldn't be like memory playing with that, or
well, not RAM, but there is memory. There is video memory, and it could be that could be a problem. You know, one thing you might want to do, chat room suggested, if you've got a free slot on that machine, is buy an inexpensive GPU, a separate video card that you could just pop in there and see if it fixes it.
I've done that and got something that didn't work. So
that was worse. Oh, yeah. I got a couple of 3.5-inch hard drives I could sell you. I don't know if that would help.
Talking about hard drives, I found three tetrabyte hard drives I didn't know I had. I was telling my friend about it, and the following day I found a fourth one.
Yeah, you sound like me. Yeah. I know that feeling. Oh, what's this? Oh, I bought that 2 years ago. I forgot about it. Oh.
Yeah, I got stuff. It was on sale. I
can't put my feet up on my armchair's ottoman because it's covered with old parts. One of these days I've got to dig through that. I know there's a hard drive in there somewhere. I can't off the top of my head. I mean, obviously, it sounds like a video card issue. It could be hardware. It could be software. That's the problem.
Right.
It could be either one. It's interesting that you're able. Can you boot from a live distro and just see how that works? Have you tried that?
I could. I have not tried it that
way. Try that because, do me a favor. I know you're using Mint. I'm a big fan of Pop! OS. One of the reasons I love it, it's a Linux distribution from System76, as all Linux distributions are. It's free. But one of the things I like about it is it comes with all the drivers for all the video cards.
Right. So, I heard you talk about it. I've downloaded it the other day and haven't had a chance.
So perfect opportunity to put it on a USB, boot to it, and see if you have the same problem. If you do, well, we now know it's not software. Now we know it's hardware, right? So we've eliminated software as one of the problems. And honestly, because it's motherboard video, you're kind of stuck either a new motherboard or put a video card in. You got to get the right one.
Right.
With Pop! OS, they have NVIDIA support is baked in. So get a cheap NVIDIA card, a GTX, 980 or something like that, something inexpensive, $50. Because if it is a hardware issue, it's going to be almost impossible to fix it if it's on the motherboard, right?
Okay. Yeah, I kind of suspected that.
Yeah. But do that's this is actually a useful tool for anybody who's got a problem. And of course, frequently with a computer, you're trying to narrow it down. Well, what's causing this problem? And often the big question is this a hardware problem or a software problem? And by booting to a known good operating system, you know, not the one on the hard drive, but something you put on a USB drive, and often Linux is a good choice here because it's free, it's easy to boot to. And so boot to Pop OS, and if it all seems fine, well, then you know it's not the hardware. It's something on your internal hard drive. It's the operating system or the drivers or something like that. If it continues to happen, then it's a hardware problem, and that, of course, is something you don't want to find, but at least you'll know what it is. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality. Actually, kind of a hit for VR this week. Google announced it was going to stop making its Daydream. That was the virtual reality headset that worked with its Google phones. Apparently, I didn't even notice, but Samsung stopped making Gear VR, which was their VR headset that worked with Samsung phones some time ago. So now, if you want VR, virtual reality, you need to get a dedicated virtual reality headset at somewhat great expense. The nice thing about these phone visor things is the phone was the expense. You already paid for that. So the VR visors you stuck your phone in, you know, they were about $100. It was a low-cost way to get into virtual reality. I honestly think virtual reality may have been a flash in the pan. I don't know. I watch, we have a 16-year-old. His friends come over. First thing they do, in fact, they were a little upset last night. Michael said, hey, you, guy who walks around the house, the Oculus Quest isn't working. I said, well, I don't know. Fix it. He said, so I went over and we figured it out. We had to repair the controllers. It was just a little thing. But they spend most of the evening on Friday evenings. He has three VR sets. He's got the HTC Vive, which is my favorite, the relatively inexpensive standalone Oculus Quest. And then I have the old Oculus Rift from way back when it first came out. And they play, his three or four buddies will come over and they'll play all the VR games. Beat Saber, you know, they're dancing around. It's kind of silly. They don't laugh at each other, though. I guess they're used to it. Me, on the other hand, I don't know. I'm wondering, was this a flash in the pan? Is this like 3D movies, 3D TVs? Is this just going to go by the wayside? I don't know. What do you think? 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Yeah, you can't get the Samsung Gear VR anymore or Google's Daydream. So the least expensive way to try virtual reality is this Oculus Quest. But it's still, I think, what is it, $400, $300? Still some bucks. You'd have to kind of be all in on it to do it. Glenda Costa Mesa, California is next. Hello, Glenda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Glenda.
Hi. I have I think it's a fairly simple question.
I hope so.
I need to buy a...
I'm exhausted after those questions.
I have to buy a color printer for home business. Yeah. And I really don't want to spend more than like $250 to $300, but I want it to be wireless. It seems like everything is wireless now, but two-sided would be great. I have a black and white printer that scans. I think it even scans color, but it scans and does all that. So I don't need it to be fancy, but I would like it to be quick. And
so one thing about color that I will note is, so there's really two kinds of printers. There's inkjet and there's laser.
Right.
At the office, you'll see the laser printer commonly because the cost per page is fairly low and they tend to be very, you know, heavy duty for big duty cycles. At home, you almost always see inkjet because, well, kids like color. People want color. They want to be able to print photos and stuff. And even though you can get color laser, it's what we call business color. Fine for a pie chart. Not so great for a student's report or a photo printer. So I would say you probably want an inkjet printer.
Yes.
And there are a lot of companies that make these. HP's famous for theirs. So is Brother. Our sponsor, Epson, in my opinion, makes the best inkjet printers. And the reason is they're not cartridges. It's an inkjet, but it has tanks of ink. And the advantage of that is you fill it, and then it goes thousands of pages before you have to buy more ink, which saves you a ton of money.
So I was looking at the Epson EcoTank.
That's our sponsor.
ET2720.
Yeah. Very nice choice. It's wireless. It does copy and scan. I know you don't really care about that, but that's kind of, if you want two-sided printing, automatic two-sided printing, you're going to need the kind of mechanism that takes the page, flips it over, and prints on the other side. And as long as they're putting that in, they're going to
Okay, so which one does that, do you know?
They all do that.
They do two-sided?
They will all do two-sided. In fact, I set my Epson for two-sided by accident, and I was wondering for a while all my printouts were half the... And then I realized, oh, that's good. That's saving paper. That's good. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Some say two-sided, but this one didn't say two-sided.
Oh, well, I don't have the 2720, so I don't know. I have the old 4750, which is, I believe, been replaced by the 4760 now. So I don't know. I know mine does two-sided. I see auto two-sided. Yeah, the less expensive ones, I guess they don't put that flipper mechanism in there. So you're right.
It probably costs $10.
So that's the 2720. You go one step up, 2760. You get a bigger tank, and you get two-sided printing. So.
Oh boy. Okay. And wireless, but that's probably
they're all wireless nowadays. Yeah. Because you know why? We all have multiple computers. We don't want to all be attached by a USB cable to our printer. So it's nice. Wireless is great. You put it on the Wi-Fi. Everybody in the house can print to it.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
My pleasure. I think you'll like it. Yeah. Yeah. And I should mention again, it's a sponsor, but I happen to like them a lot. In fact, we kind of choose our sponsors based on what I like. So, I have no problem recommending that. In fact, for years I used Epson's, for photo printing as well. I thought they just really do the best photo printing, and I think they still do. Jocelyn in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Hello, Jocelyn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I have no.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, I hear myself in the background. I hope it's not going to confuse you.
No, I just had to turn off.
Yeah, yeah. You were listening to know when you were on. Yeah, of course.
Yes, absolutely. I have one. Have a good vacation.
Thank you. I'll be here next week. It's 2 weeks from now. Rich DeMuro of KTLA will be filling in for a couple of weekends. Yeah, Rich is nice. He's great.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, we love him.
So I have a challenging question for you.
Okay.
I have an Essential phone.
Oh, my goodness. Died. There's a memory.
Yes.
But you know what? That was a great phone.
It was, and I loved it until it just died on me.
It's not that old. It shouldn't be dying.
Yes, you're right.
The problem is they don't make it anymore, and I bet you it's tough to get support for it. The company did not go away.
Correct. And so because I bought it early, I'm no longer under warranty.
Oh, okay.
So I am trying to hopefully make this into a learning moment. And I'm wondering if I can treat my mini Essential computer like I would a regular computer. Can I take out the hard, well, not the hard drive, the SSD drive?
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
Put it into something else?
No. The answer is no. So Android phones, this is an Android phone. Most of them, and I bet you the Essential does, have something called USB to go.
Yes.
Which lets you connect them up. But the phone has to work. It has to be on. So if you have a non-working phone, you can't take it apart. The memory chip that they use as storage is built into the logic board there. So it can't be really extracted from it. I know.
I was willing to cannibalize it. And
I know. You spent a lot of money on that phone.
Yes. And, it's a wonderful thing, and the drive is huge because it started out with 128 for me.
Nice.
But I did get another phone, so I'm happy with my new phone, but I missed that information.
Yeah. Well, the good news is you have all your information backed up, right?
Well, see, this is the lesson for everyone.
Uh-oh.
All my photos are backed up.
Oh, good.
But
anything that I downloaded, like a recipe or any audio that I recorded or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's a different question. That's, can I recover the stuff on this drive? And if it won't even turn, will it turn on?
No, not anymore.
Yeah, if it won't even turn on, then that's a challenge. I'm not sure why it won't turn on. Maybe the battery just died and you could open it up, put a new battery in, that kind of thing. It would really help to have Essentials cooperation. Here's the real problem. You could buy a 128 gig USB flash drive. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
$18.
Yes.
So I think that would be a lot easier than just turning this phone into an $18 flash drive. It would probably be a lot faster. It's certainly more convenient. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, you could, I would call Essential. They still sell this phone. I'd call them and see. Maybe they can fix it.
Oh, well, they wrote me off.
They did.
Well, we had conversation. They said I bought it. Well, my phone was no longer in warranty, which it wasn't. And yeah. I admit that.
They're a struggling company. They have a new phone they're going to be selling sometime soon. But this phone, they didn't sell very many of them. I was like you. I bought it when it first came out. I thought, this is great.
Yes. And it was.
And it was for a little while. They had that camera was always problematic. Eventually, they fixed that. Did you ever get the, like, Snap-on accessories?
I started to do so later, but by the time I decided to, they were no longer available.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a, the company started by Andy Rubin, who was the founder of Android. He was at Google, got fired for sexual harassment. They gave him $90 million as he walked out the door. Thank you very much. And he started Essential. He's got a new phone, the Gem, that looks kind of interesting, but you kind of highlighted the problem. You buy a phone from a company like this, it's not like Samsung or Apple or, you know, it's Google. They're not really, they were just barely survived. I think they lost their shirts on the Essential phone.
So, that would make sense.
Yeah, so I think they're just not. It's interesting because it looks like they're still selling it, which cracks me up. I can't imagine anybody's. Oh, I know why they're selling it. They have a bunch of them in a warehouse.
Yes.
Which is why they should give you a new one, just so you don't call me and say, hey, they're not helping me.
Well, and I have to admit, the biggest issue was, oh, wow, I wonder which recipes I did save there.
Oh, man.
That kind of thing.
So I'm going to give you a tip. I use a recipe book on my phones, iOS and Android, that syncs to the cloud. It's called Paprika. Love it. It's highly recommended. And that way, even if you lose the phone, you'll never lose your recipes.
And odd question. Well, I should know this. To back up my data that I put on my phone.
From now on.
Yeah, from now on. Moving forward. Should I just get a Drive account? And would that automatically sync it? Or do I have to manually?
You probably have enough storage at your on your Google Drive anyway. But yeah, Google will back it up. In fact, if you look in the settings, there's a backup command.
Okay.
And it'll do it automatically. If you get one from Samsung, they have their own backup. Verizon has their own backup. Everybody wants to get in the backup business, so you have many choices. But all Android phones, that's the default, is backup to Google.
Okay.
Next time.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Thank you for
Thanks, Jocelyn. Great to talk to you.
Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more calls. And the GizWiz coming up. Absolutely nothing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. She's spinning those discs. Dick B. DiBartolo, our GizWiz, coming up in about 15 minutes with a crazy gadget. Meanwhile, back to the phones at 88. Ask Leo. Timmy in Oak Hills, California. Hello, Timmy.
Hey, good afternoon, Leo. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Really good. I'll take it easy on you. I know you've had a long day. I got hopefully two quick related reception questions.
Okay.
Because, you piqued my interest when you were talking earlier. I forget the gentleman you were talking to about CES and the possible upgrade to the broadcast analog digital thing. And I have my mother-in-law set up down in Laverne, California, which is Los Angeles County, and she's used that over the air broadcast receiver for all these years. Just wonderful.
Yeah.
She loves it. And she loves all the extra channels, like the 4.1, 4.2, all that cool stuff. But up here in the high desert, we don't get that kind of signal. And when they're saying that they may be able to do some upgrade, are there any plans for us ever getting a broadcast signal that we can get over an antenna up here or anywhere around the country like that?
I would guess not. But I'm not. I can't speak for any of your local TV stations. But
sure.
Generally speaking, the way it works is the station is licensed for a certain amount of power, a certain location for antenna. That's licensed by the federal government, by the FCC. I don't know of any station that would build a smaller antenna or use less power than the absolute maximum they're entitled to, because they want the largest possible audience, the largest possible reach. So I'm going to guess there's no television station in the nation that hasn't used every ounce of all the wattage and every inch of all the size that they can use to get to you, which means unless they apply for a bigger footprint, it's unlikely that they're going to expand.
Yeah, and it's probably the mountain range that's the big barrier for us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So the best thing to do, there's two really good sites. See, some of this may just be you need the right antenna, right?
I've gone up like 20, 25 feet with a good old-fashioned,
wow. All right, but I'm gonna send you a couple of sites that will at least tell you, based on your location, what signals you can see, how strong they are, and if there's an antenna that will pick them up, what that would be. The first one's from the Consumer Electronics Association. Those are the people who make all this stuff, the people who put on CES every year. And that's antennaweb.org, antennaweb.org. And then there's a kind of a hobbyist site that I really like, TV Fool, and tvfool.com. And that site, actually, AntennaWeb is kind of like from the National Association of Broadcasters and the CEA. This is from the actual broadcasters, so that saying, how do you get our stuff? Well, here's how. The TV Fool is actually pretty amazing because it's crowdsourced. They've got a ton of stuff. And what you'll do is you'll put in your address, you'll see a map, and then they'll tell you, as I said, exactly how strong it is, and maybe have some tips for what you might do if you're in a weak area. We're in a weak area also. And no matter what I do, I can't get a signal from San Francisco. We're just far enough away. But
great, I'll look at that. And a quick related question, if I can.
Yes.
Is we listen to you on KFI up here. We get KFI. It's weak, but we can get it. But it's one of those stations that, depending on the noise going around.
Yep, yep.
So, of course, good old iHeartRadio has been wonderful.
Yay.
And, of course, the sound is incredibly better to begin with.
Yep.
But I have a couple, three computers around the house. And two of them are identical, and no matter how I turn them on at the same time to the exact same website for iHeartRadio,
they'll never match up. They'll never match up.
Is that just the way it is?
Yeah, because they're yes, it's called the internet, and that's why
when you have to be the same,
you'd think, but it's just enough difference. And of course, we're very well tuned to even the slightest difference. That's why people buy Sonos, which is very expensive, because it has technology to synchronize that sound from different speaker systems.
Well, God bless, Leo.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. Take care. Yeah, there are stations can use repeaters, and, you know, they do often do that. But honestly, I think it's unlikely that if you can't get the signal now, that you will be able to down the road. But if you're a TV engineer and you know different, tell me, call me. 8888 Ask Leo. Why am I saying that? They're not listening. Tech Guy Show. Go back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Mark on the line from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Leo. My wife would not let me talk to you without saying Kate and Leo forever.
Oh, my old buddy from the Screensavers days. 20 years ago.
Yeah. Those were good times, weren't
they? Those were the good times. You bet.
Hey, you know what? You've got me in Linux fever here.
Oh! Wow. You know, the Screensavers was the first national television show to install Linux on a computer live. It was also the last national television show to install Linux on a computer live. The only one ever to do that. But I've been a fan for 20 years. And, you know, it's gotten better and better. Much better now. Much easier. Yeah.
I know the first time I tried it was like 28 years ago, and you had to go on like a driver treasure hunt.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly right. And then one of the real challenges was getting the video display working properly. You had to go through a long checklist in a program called X-Free Config or X-Free 86 Config. I don't know if you remember that, but, man, it was janky. But we've come a long way. And I would say now the installation of most modern Linux distributions is about as easy as Windows, in some cases easier, especially these days since Windows is having a lot of problems.
Wouldn't be surprised. Well, here's my situation. I've got a early 2008 20-inch iMac, and it's running 10.11, and it runs great.
Yep.
But you're making me want to try Linux out. So my question is, can I download Pop! OS, put it on a USB key that's bootable using the Mac OS, and boot to that and just test Pop! OS out?
Yeah, in theory you can. My experience is Linux and Macs are not a perfect match made in heaven. Most Linux distributions are designed to run on Windows PCs. The problem here is that Apple is the only company that makes Macintosh computers, and so a lot of the hardware in there is proprietary to Apple, which means there often aren't drivers. So Macs, while I know people put Pop! OS and other versions of Linux on their Macs all the time, it's not always the easiest thing in the world. I would strongly suggest you do some research on that particular model and then look and see which version of Linux works best with that. It may not be Pop! OS. It may be one that has better drivers. And it may be. The nice thing is this is easy and free to do. You just just download Pop! OS, put it on a USB key, and there are definitely ways to do that on a Mac very easily. I do it on the Mac all the time. I use a command line to do it, but there are tools that will let you do that as well. And then once you have on the USB key, you reboot the Mac, hold down the Option key. As it's booting up, it will give you a list of all the drives it can boot to. You boot to that Linux and see what happens. That's the easiest way on any machine to see if Linux will work. If it's got all the drivers and the keyboard works and the mouse works and the monitor works, and sound works and all that, then you're golden.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I'm glad I called you and get that in.
Yeah. I think the reason is that Mac is based on Unix. It's got a BSD core. And so it has a command line, it has a shell, it has all the things that people often want but don't get on Windows. Really, Windows is the outlier. Every other major operating system, Linux, Mac, BSD, they're all based on this operating system that was invented 50 years ago at Bell Labs called Unix. And it really is the king of operating systems. And it's my opinion that really every computer works better running some flavor of or some derivative of the Unix operating system. But since Mac is a derivative, you could make a case, may even be closer to the original Unix than Linux is. Because the kernel's based on a BSD kernel, a mock kernel. A lot of people just say, well, I got it. I don't need to do it. I've got what I want on a Macintosh. So, yeah. But, I think it's worth playing with. It's really a lot of fun. My general, my modus operandi is when I buy a Windows machine, I live with Windows as long as I can stand it. And then when I can't stand it anymore, I put Linux on it.
Right. Yeah, I've heard you say that many times. All right, well, I'll give it a try.
All right. Have fun. It is a blast. And say hi to your wife. Kate and I stay in touch. She's just fabulous, doing very well. She lives in Michigan now with her husband and does a lot of public radio there in Traverse City. The Kate Botello days, those were the days. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see. Line 4, Alice, Vancouver, Washington. Hi, Alice.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess I'm the only one I've talked to that's upset with Apple's upgrade concerning their computer.
Yeah?
Are
you talking about Catalina, the new version of Mac OS?
Let's see.
Probably.
13.1.3 is as far as
Oh, that's okay. So that's not Mac. That's iOS. That's your phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. I'm glad we get it clarified. Yes. Yeah,
I was chasing cats around the house.
You're a little out of breath. I find that cats are harder to catch than most other animals, my experience has been. So let me just go look at my iPhone and see what, because they've been updating it weekly since iOS 13 came out. I am up to
terrible.
Date.
Their computer is.
I know.
Sideways.
It's nuts.
Down. It's inferior. It's awful. You cannot schedule appointments.
So I don't know what's going on over there in Cupertino. Apple has had lots of.
Am I the only one?
Oh gosh, no. Apple has had lots of problems with its operating systems of late. They put out, when the iPhone came out September 20th, it came with the new iOS 13. Now, they had had a six-month public beta test. I tried it. A lot of people tried it. But for some reason, when 13.0 came out, it was just a mess. Remember that part of the reason 13.0 came out on the iPhone is they make those iPhones months ahead of time. They have to put an operating system on them before they ship them. They knew they were going to update it pretty quick, but it was so bad that they advanced the update to 13.1 by a week or two. It came out 4 days later. You could update your brand new iPhone to 13.1. But then there were lots of problems. So they did 13.1.1. And that fixed some problems, but it broke other things. So they did 13.1.2. Then it turned out there were some security issues. So they did.
I know.
They've been doing one a week for the last month. It's now 13.1.3. I don't know what to say. I think you're right. We need 13.1.4.
At least.
They're testing 13.2. And I have heard good people say that they like it better, that it's better. And I suspect we will see 13.2 sooner than later, like in the next few weeks.
I was just hoping perhaps you would have an insight into how to get around that calendar problem.
So what is your calendar doing?
Well, you know, you go to the main page of a calendar, picture of the calendar like you see on your wall.
Yeah.
And you could put everything and see where you were and then just come, you know,
yeah, I like that.
And,
yeah.
And get a feeling for, you know, where you were in the world and where to put your appointments.
It's like a map of your day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't now. There's little dots.
Oh, I know.
So you know that there's
you're right.
Something
there's,
going on,
it doesn't
but you
say
can
anything.
Tell.
All right, I'm gonna. You know what? This is one of the reasons. There's many. I don't use Apple's calendar app on the iPhone. I use Fantastical. Let me just see if Fantastical, which is available for download, it's not free. When I look at it, when I look at the month, I get the month, but I also get a list of all the things, and I can click on any day and see. I think it's better. There's not a lot of room on that phone to do a calendar, but I think Fantastical is an improvement. There's also BusyCal, which I used for a long time. I think the third-party calendar apps are actually better. So now it's not free, but it's only a few bucks, and I think it's worth taking a look at. Let me just see. So, yeah, the way Fantastical does it may not be what you want either, because what it shows me by default, let me see if I expand the, so you can swipe and make it bigger, but I guess I can't do, so what it shows me is the month calendar. It never does that thing where it shows the actual text in the boxes. That's the old way of doing it. It does show, though, a list underneath the month of all the events. So it's a little easier to read. I think part of that's just the size of the screen makes it hard. Let me see if I turn it sideways.
iPads are perfect for it.
Yeah, iPad does it beautifully because the iPad has plenty of screen space. But
I use them a lot.
Yeah, I think that may be just the fact that the monthly calendar is just not going to doesn't have enough room to spread out there. Take a look at Fantastical or BusyCal. I think both of them do a much better job than the Apple calendar.
Well, thanks. I was losing my sanity over here.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know if that's one they'll fix. I think that's just a new user interface that they're just going to stick with.
Ew.
That's why I use the iPad, because, then you can see the month. It's just like the calendar on the wall. You can see all your appointments
in
there.
Used to.
The iPad doesn't do it either now?
No, that's what I'm...
Oh, try Fantastical. It will do that on the iPad for sure.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Have a great day.
Take care. Nice to talk to you, Alice. Yeah, it's sometimes those third-party apps are actually better. The iPad show. Yeah, okay. If she's on the iPad, there's enough room to show you the calendar. A little BG action. That's how we dance in the show with Dick DiBartolo, Mads, Maddest Raider, and our Giz Whiz. Happy birthday, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
They turned out all the lights in Disneyland so that
they could
surprise you with a cake.
Yeah. It's so funny. My camera's lit up and I have I don't need to see you.
It's the radio.
Okay.
It's radio.
It's radio.
Dick DiBartolo has been for more than 50 years Mad Magazine's maddest writer. You posted on your Twitter the psychedelic diary. When did that come out?
Boy, that came back out probably in the 70s, and it was, you know, the object was what would happen if you took LSD, and we asked a writer to do it, and I pretend that I'm writing and that nothing's happening, and then it goes from 10 in the morning to 1492.
And it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. I love it, and what I love is the tweet. Somebody tweeted this, Doug Guilford at Mad Cover site, where you can find every Mad cover. And he says, happy birthday, Dick DiBartolo, the Giz Whiz. Still funny after all these years. This particular one cracks me up. And then your response is even funnier. Thanks for posting that, Doug. Strangely, many people remember that piece. But I have no memory of writing that satire at all. It had no long-term effect, although I did die 24 hours after I read it. Or was that someone sad I hear screaming, but I need to get gas first? What wallpaper?
Yeah, Dick, is there something wrong with that?
No, you still got it, baby. You still got it. It's Twitter. Every time I read something on Twitter, I feel like, am I having a stroke or is this nonsense? I don't know. I can't tell. Maybe I took acid. Dick joins us every week. We call him the Giz Whiz, the Gizmo Wizard, because he comes up with the craziest, funnest gadgets. What do you have for us this
week? Well, you know what? I have to thank a viewer who came to the meetup, and I think it was Merce Angel, who said, you know, you always show weird gadgets. Here's a weird gadget for you. And he gave it to me, and at first, I totally didn't understand it. It's called the VR3 Phone Line Charger and Nightlight.
VR3 phone line charger and nightlight.
So it works for me, and it'll work for you if you still have a working copper line phone.
What?
Yes. Oh, you know, you of all people know that there's some voltage in the phone line.
Yeah, so that if the power's out, the phone company can still call you.
Can still call and say, where's our money?
It's
a blackout. All right, so this little guy plugs into the phone jack.
There's coming out of that thing to charge a phone?
You know what, Leo? You have to leave it plugged in all the time. It took about 8 to 10 hours
It's got a battery in it.
Exactly. It has an 1800 milliamp battery in it. It has a little window so that it automatically lights the night light at dusk and turns it off in the morning. But it has a USB out in the front, so that in case there is a blackout, you can charge your phone partially. Okay. What I did is I took a Galaxy that was dead and plugged it in. And with an 1800 milliamp battery, I think I charged an older Galaxy up to about 48%. But if you had no power and you had no external battery charger handy, this is a way. And actually, you can then take this out of the wall and walk around and use it as a mini flashlight. It's cheap. On Amazon, didn't get great reviews on Amazon. It got 2.9 out of 5 stars, but it's under $7.
Oh, who cares then, right?
Yeah, okay. And over at Walmart, it says not available online, but being closed out at the stores for $4.44.
Now, it is a limited market because a lot of people no longer have phone
Absolutely.
Lines.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I am one of them because I have copper on two of my lines because we were not getting fire. They're not putting fires in the little buildings. Not enough money.
Yeah. And of
just
course,
the big buildings.
For a long time, there were rules against them with cutting the copper. Even if they put fios in or you got, you know, cable phone lines, they weren't supposed to cut the copper. And I've been telling people, I told my mom this. The best emergency solution is to have a regular old-fashioned phone line like you used to get from Ma Bell and an old-fashioned phone attached to it. Not one that plugs into the power outlet, but just plugs into the wall. That's it. Because yes. that will not go out in case of emergency. And that's, you know, from years of making the phone system safe and reliable in this country. Unfortunately, with deregulation, phone companies have started cutting that copper. They don't want to maintain it. They don't want people to buy it. They want you to buy more expensive voice over internet solutions. And so a lot of people are losing those copper lines. But really, it's the safest thing you can have. You got to go to a Radio Shack, though, and buy a phone that... Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. World's changing, Dick, right underneath
Very,
us.
Very fiat.
So happy birth. That's what happens when you get to your age.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Are you doing anything to celebrate?
Let's see. Dennis bought tickets to a weird thing called the Gay Urban Orchestra Plays a Night of Scary Music. So I'm not sure if it's that the orchestra is... scary, but I think it's a night of Halloween music. Scary Halloween.
I think
Halloween
it sounds
music.
Fun. Is that tonight? Yeah.
Tonight.
Oh, well, have a great time.
Yeah. I'm going to do a Giz Fizz with video and then be going.
Yeah, we'll press the start button on your video. And,
okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap up the show in a few minutes and then I'm going to do a few things to record for my vacation. And you should be able to get on the Twitch stream, our podcast stream, in about half an hour. And we'll all be wishing you a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Dickie.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Great
happy
to have you.
Vacation.
Yeah. Well, I'll be here next week. We recorded ahead of
that's right.
And you
yes,
and I
you
did
are.
A segment. But then Rich Demuro will be here. And I know you hate his guts. But please.
Oh, my God. He's terrible. He's terrible.
No. We're being silly.
No, Jamma B said, say that or you're out of here.
So Rich will be taking over, not next weekend, but 2 weekends after next weekend. And he's going to be, of course, from KTLA. He's always wonderful. We love it that we have somebody. Makes me feel better about taking vacation that can fill in and do such a great job. So thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
And I'll see you in a little bit. And that does it for me. I want to thank the wonderful Lady Laura, our musical director. We've had some fun today. Thank you, Laura, for some great music. Thanks, of course, to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. She... does such a good job answering the phones. Thanks to you for joining me. I'm going to go on vacation. We recorded a show ahead for next week, so it's an all brand new show. Don't worry. Lots of great calls. All your favorite guests. It's just a great show. And then Rich Demuro filling in for me the weekend after that. I'll be back in November. I think I come back November 16th. So it's going to be a nice long vacation. I'll tweet probably at Leo Laporte. I also have a blog, leolaporte.com. I'll put pictures up there if you want to stay in touch. Otherwise, I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. You know what I always say? Go to the website, techguylabs.com. That's where all the show notes are. And have a great geek week. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.